Hello and welcome to another episode of Inside the Pods, the PJRO podcast. I'm Matt Webster and today I am speaking with Anna-Sophie Dietchen, the CEO and co-founder of Morrow, a company who are looking to reinvent coffee. So Anna, could you start off with just telling us what Morrow does?
So we're creating coffee without the coffee bean. So we're creating a product where we're hoping that it smells, tastes, and also feels like coffee, but we are not using the coffee beans, but instead are creating it from locally grown crops and plants and also upcycled ingredients. So what we mean with that is, I guess, ingredients that are used in food manufacturing that go to waste in side streams. So we're looking, for example, at malting and brewing industries and are trying to revalue those ingredients. And then in terms of the plants and crops that we're hoping to source them as locally as possible here in the UK. So, and ideally from regenerative farming systems. So very much looking at pulses for the ingredient composition. But yeah, the important part, it's something that tastes and smells like coffee. So it's not just another alternative that doesn't taste great. Like I know that there's barley camp coffee out there as well.
So now when I was reading up on the company and what you guys did, I was really intrigued by beanless coffee. Essentially, how on earth?
That's a question we actually get quite a lot. So how it works, there's a food science involved. So it's obviously not something where we can just get the ingredients, get in our kitchen and blend and roast it, have the product ready. But we are working with food scientists at the University of Nottingham currently, and my co-founder Caroline, she's also coming from a more technical nutrition background, on analyzing the compounds, I guess the aroma compounds that you find in coffee. So coffee gets the taste and the aroma really from the fermentation, natural fermentation and roasting process. So it's not actually the green bean that you source that gives the flavor profile.
Right.
And what we try and do is identify which are, I guess, the most common and most popular aromas in coffee and roasting profiles. And then we try and replicate that by looking at other ingredients, like the locally sourced crops and plants and upcycled ingredients, and identify the aroma compounds in those ingredients, and then try and find a composition which essentially replicates aroma profiles in coffee. Right. So it is it's a trial and error. We've got a number of recipes at the moment with different ingredients and different ratios that we're testing. But it's very much just going through that, through the different recipe compositions until we hit, I guess, the good flavor notes. And again, it can be something we can quite well stir the flavor. So it can be a little bit more maybe chocolatey or more fruity or acidic, whatever consumers want the most.
Cool. Yeah, it does sound like just a lot of experimentation until you hit that jackpot, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yes.
And so, well, that was the how. Why did you begin this endeavor?
So two reasons, really. Most people will know coffee is huge. I think in the UK, we drink around 100 million cups of coffee every day. Yeah. Globally, it ranks up to over 3 billion. And that demand for coffee is just growing. So it's not decreasing because coffee is now used in so many applications, right? Rather than just the hot drink. And we can find it in anything from tiramisu, coffee liqueurs, all the way to the beauty industry, where people now use it as body scrubs.
Yeah.
So there's demand is increasing for coffee, but coffee itself, the plant actually has quite a lot of environmental issues. First of all, when we're looking at its carbon footprint, that's quite high. So it's ranking actually right after beef, lamb and cheese, which is one of the plant with the highest carbon footprint. But then also looking at the supply chain, there are ethical environmental issues, and estimates say that by 2050, because of the extreme climate conditions that we're now facing, 60% of land that's currently suitable for coffee cultivation will actually disappear. So there's this huge, I guess, coffee deficit in terms of supply coming towards us. Yeah. And very few people know about it. There's a similar, I guess, thing that's happening in the cocoa industry. And people are definitely more aware because of, I guess, bigger companies like Tony's Chocolonely, who are creating a bit more awareness. But coffee faces essentially the same issues. So we set out because we love coffee as well, and we don't want to go without it to create something, yeah, that tastes and smells like coffee, but actually also does something good for the planet and can benefit farmers and growers in the UK, rather than having to rely on huge imports of coffee from tropical regions.
Right. And for how long have you been doing this?
We've started last summer. So last summer it was very much a concept and an idea that popped into our heads. And then it took a little while to form more concretely, but really properly started kind of product development and looking into that at the start of this year. So fairly new.
Right. You mentioned that you're using pulses a lot as some of your ingredients. Obviously, from our end, pulses, we're all about pulses. And so, what
Yeah.
pulses are you looking at?
So that's a really good question. We're still in product trials. So we are testing a number of different pulses and also grains that here, well, cereals grown in the UK. So we're looking now at, I guess, more readily available ingredients like peas. Then rye and barley, appreciate not pulses, but then on maybe some pulses that are less readily available, I guess, for human consumption and commercial uses, fava beans, lentils, chickpeas, and lupin beans.
Okay.
So obviously appreciate they can be grown some more than others in the UK, but we've seen quite a bit of a few challenges there in terms of infrastructure and continuous supply, but those ideally we'd love to have in the final recipe composition.
Yeah, lentils especially, I think we've been looking into lentil growth in the UK as well, and it's a rarity, I think, from what we've come across.
Yeah,
I think to
it
get
is.
sort of a UK lentil supply chain, that would be very good. And speaking of your supply chain, is there any specific region or suppliers that you're working with?
In terms of regions, again, I guess we're spanning the network quite wide, wherever possible they can be grown, as long as it's kind of in the UK. It seems definitely that more southern regions are more, I don't, well, have the better climates for the ingredients that we need.
They only ever rains up north.
Yeah, exactly. Which I guess we just spoke with a supplier that we're gonna do some trials with for peas.
Right.
So yellow peas and maybe trialing some completely new varieties that are more climate resistant in Norwich. So I mean,
Okay.
not north north, but I guess slightly more north
Close enough.
than where we're based. Yeah. So that's what we're looking at. But it's really for us at the moment, and especially in the next 2 3 months, because we're hoping to launch a first product in September, to build out partnerships with suppliers, the growers that would also be willing to maybe experiment a little bit at the start, and or suppliers with some ingredients that they're already growing, and then maybe do some site trials on the side for the likes of, yeah, lentils, even chickpeas. I know it's a difficult topic, but yeah.
Fantastic. And obviously sustainability, that is the name of the game. And from the sounds of it, that is your primary focus, well, one of your primary focuses with Morrow. Could you perhaps
Yeah.
dive a little deeper into this? Tell us a bit more about what you're doing to achieve sustainability.
Yeah. So it's our mission, I guess, sustainability very much at the forefront of our mind. We do appreciate that it's tricky to say, you know, you're completely, I don't know, 100% organic, 100% whatever it might be, and all these certifications, when the supply chain and the infrastructure, process infrastructure, isn't yet as well set up as it could be. But because we are in product development and we can very much consider and trial different ingredients, that's why we want to work with farmers that are already practicing regeneratively. Or again, if we're procuring some ingredients from circular systems where we're actually upcycling, doesn't really have a carbon footprint at all, because they're already being produced. So we very much tackle product development with that kind of regenerative and circular food systems design in mind. And then what we're doing at the moment is we work with the University of Nottingham, but also with organisations like NIAP on, I guess, the crop science to understand not just which ingredients would be great for the product and the flavour, but then which ones are actually supporting carbon savings and crop rotations, can support soil health, and then can be grown for like human consumption. So for us, it's not necessarily about just hitting accreditations and certifications, of course, an important part, but really kind of coming from the ground up, how can we already design the product with nature in mind, rather than trying to having to reformulate later down the line.
Fantastic. And whereabouts are you guys based?
So Caroline and I are based in London, as in the business, but obviously we have, I guess, a team in Nottingham that works with us. Then our suppliers are also not there. We have some advisors all around the country, but our team is still very, very small.
And I appreciate you saying your team is very small in this very early days, but is Mara involved at all in like the wider pulse sector or perhaps the community, or is there anything that you're planning to do in the future regarding that?
So we're part of the Ellen MacArthur Foundation Big Food Redesign Challenge, which you might have heard of, which really, I guess, aligns with our mission as well. And we got a grant as part of the challenge, which goes directly into the product development and would directly go into trials with growers of pulses that, you know, are interested in supporting us on that journey. We're already, as said, working with someone in Eastern England, and we're actually applying just to another grant at the moment to drive innovation in agri-tech and food tech in Eastern England, where we're currently in conversations with a handful of growers that are willing and open to experiment, but also supplying us with some of their beans, peas, lentils, etc. So we're doing that, but it's a big focus at the moment to grow our network and speak to as many people as possible. Also down to understanding the challenges, the commercial, I guess, hurdles, why aren't more of those pulses being grown, and what could we do to support that? Because we have got, I think what we've done really well is that multi-stakeholder approach, and we have such a great network now of academics and researchers and crop scientists and food scientists, but then also we are getting funding on the other side to drive more of a commercial initiative.
Brilliant. And more broadly, what does the future look like for you guys?
That's, who knows? No, I'm joking. No, that's a big question. So we obviously are really looking forward to launching our first product in autumn this year. We are collaborating. We excitingly secured a partnership with the world's largest producer of malt, called Bort Malt. They are headquartered in Belgium, but they have production facilities also in Eastern England and further up north here in the UK. And we're looking to trial some of their site streams, so creating a more circular, I guess, system for them as well, of the malts that they're producing. And then, we are really keen to go to visit as many growers as possible. We're holding quite a few focus groups over the summer and autumn. So if anyone's listening that would like to be part of the focus groups and support our project and mission, that would be awesome. But yeah, hopefully by the end of the year, our product will be out there and ready to be tested by lots of people and consumers. And then hopefully we have a first UK grown and produced coffee in the next year.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully I'll keep my eye out for that.
Definitely. We'll send you some samples.
Brilliant. I'd love that. I'm a bit, drinking too much coffee.
Yeah, we all do.
Thanks, Anna. And that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe on whichever podcast service you listen to so you never miss a future episode.